Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I hope that everybody's ready to plow forward, because we're going to get back into nullification, interposition, and the differences between these two and the fallacy of nullification. Now, nullification is not necessarily a fallacy per se. It was just a no-brainer. That's what you did. But that's not what Madison and Jefferson were doing. Not at all. And as a matter of fact, we're going to get into the meat of that argument when we get to it. But there's a few things that we have to cover. Hope you enjoyed my interview with Dr. Vile. And I hope that if you've not been following this nullification interposition discussion, then go to reclaimingtherepublic.org, download the previous shows. I think it was... I think it was the second and third. I believe those are the two shows. Anyway, long story short, you're going to want to get abreast with this if you want to understand precisely what Madison and Jefferson were doing. Because, and the reason why, drum roll, because this gives you the insight of what Republic Review is all about. Republic Review is the interposition. It is the states taking their authority and asserting it, regardless of what any organization's out there to tell you. The states have the authority over all things not delegated, and they have constitutional force over those things. The Supreme Court has no jurisdiction. They have no force over things that are not within their jurisdiction. If it is not a delegated power to the federal government, then the Supreme Court isn't the court of, they may be a court of opinion, but they're not the court that has the jurisdiction or can even, you know, weigh in on this. I mean, maybe commentary with Fox News or whomever. But the fact of the matter is, the only court that has jurisdiction over this are the states when they are collectively joined in deciding what to do about the failures of the general government in abiding by and complying to their constitution. Now, the listen number is 605-562-4209 or 605-313-0599. You want to put those into your, program those into your phone so that when you cannot stream the show, you can at least, at a minimum, be able to just dial up and listen. We've expanded so that we have the two lines. So let's overload the phone banks there, and let's go to a third line. Anyway, we're not going to be able to get into the news. There's also, these stories aren't going anywhere. As a matter of fact, they're gathering dust, and there is really nothing, you know, other than earthquakes and calamities and everything. You know, the end of times is coming. We know this. And there is nothing more important as far as when it comes to what is going on with government politics and so forth. There is nothing more important than focusing and understanding what we have to do to solve the problem. Everything that is going on, whether it is, you know, the Antifa, you know, destructions in Portland, or whether it is, you know, the geopolitical issues and the buildup to the G8, 920s, and so forth, chemtrails, all of these things are distractions. The most important thing that we need to do is understand what it takes to get the federal government into compliance, because once we understand and we can start working on getting the federal government into compliance, then most of these problems go away. Chemtrails go away. I don't care who's spending the money. They do not have the authority and the airspace over our states to actually be poisoning us in the air. whether they're playing with climate change or what have you. I don't know what the heck they're doing. I honestly think it's bad manipulation in trying to hurt our economy more. And it is about the globalist design in trying to get everybody into a position to where we become completely dependent on them. So again, the news isn't really going anywhere. So what we're going to do is I'm going to try to wrap up. Maybe we won't wrap up completely. And if we don't today, then we will hopefully wrap up in the next show, the myth of nullification. And so anyway, we'll see. But we're also, I promised, I am going to go through Thomas Jefferson's draft of the Declaration of Independence. Why is this important? Because no doubt Jefferson was the visionary. Jefferson had the insights. Now, Madison was another visionary, and these two men were remarkable. The synergy that these two created, I mean, just look, they held the presidency for 16 years, and the fact was that these two men were capable of ending the harassment and putting America well on its way of an independent sovereign nation. Now, it didn't mean that Britain wasn't working in the background trying to figure out hooks to, you know, take control of us. But all of those hooks that they have placed in us are all unconstitutional. The people that allowed those things to happen didn't have the authority to do that, nor did they do it legally. So when people talk about corporations, and all, that's another distraction. That's just like the federal government taking jurisdiction over abortion, or the federal government taking jurisdiction over vaccination or healthcare. All of these things are problems because the federal government has no authority and jurisdiction over these things. And so as long as they can keep on pulling up other little, I'll call them weapons, tools, or what have you, to keep us distracted and to engage you, we're going to lose this. We will lose this fight. We're going to lose the battle. We'll lose the war because we're fighting the facade that they're creating. That's all just a house of cards. All we have to do, I read it in a meme, if you want to kill the Hydra, you have to kill it at its heart. You basically have to chop out, not the appendages, but you have to kill the base. You don't fight the appendages. The appendages will, you know, grow back a couple more appendages. That's why it is a fool's errand in trying to engage in those issues. The issue is all about compliance to the Constitution. And the process is auditing. This is what Jefferson did in the Kentucky Resolution of 1798. Go read it. He audited the Constitution. He called out every violation from the different bills and acts that were passed with this Alien and Sedition Acts. He was auditing the Constitution. He was identifying how each of these were violating different parts of the Constitution. And then he gets into the fact of, we've covered this, and we're going to go into this again. I'm sorry, I just went down a rat hole, and let me wrap this up. Let me actually get into the groveling real quick. If you want to support what we are doing and what we're about, and what we're about is saving our liberties. We're about saving liberties and sovereignty for the people and for the states collectively, so that we all can enjoy individual liberty and individual sovereignty. I can't put it any clearer than that. So one of the ways you can actually support us is going and buying the Red State Coffee. They're a sponsor, if you want to call them a sponsor. They're just supporters of us. And so the proceeds, a portion of the proceeds of their selling this coffee to you will come to us. Now, I'm really trying to find somebody that will, you know, get into helping us financially so that we can do the travel, we can do the rodeos, we can do some movies. We want to give you movies, so that documentaries, so you can understand from other people's perspectives just how important what we're doing is. And so we're not going to sell you these movies. Our intent is to try to give this all to you. We want, if it was about money a long time ago, I wouldn't even be on the radio anymore. I would have failed. I'm sure that I would have been undermined somehow because I would have been in the pursuit of money. I need help financially to do these things, but we have great vision and great plans, and we're hoping to actually, if you're involved in the party, great. If not, we need to get you there. But if you want to support us, buy Red State Coffee. We also have the social or the crowdfunding, social funding. We have the crowdfunding on GoFundMe. It's Reclaiming the Republic. The links to both the Red State Coffee for the grind and or the whole beans is on reclaimingtherepublic.org as well as the GoFundMe. So if you want to support, that's two ways you can support. The most important support we really need is your labor, your time, your leadership. We need you to become a leader in your state. We need all of the state legislators to stand up, and they're not doing their job, so we need to replace them. I was just looking at a bunch of glory pictures, selfies, whatever you want to call them, of a lot of different legislators in Idaho. All these legislators are sticking out their chest, you know, like, oh, we're so conservative and we're the great champions of the Constitution. And to me, that is a huge facade. And I wish I could get into that, but we will have to cover that in another show after we take care of all the other things this week. Because a lot of these people that are thumping their chest, like they're the conservative, they're the constitutional legislators, they're not. As a matter of fact, we're watching the Constitution getting torn to shreds, and they're claiming victory. Are you kidding me? Anyway, we will be right back after this. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue. Okay, so 2 months, folks, 2 months. You have 2 months until Constitution Day is coming up. What are you going to do? Are you going to actually get involved and help raise constitutional awareness in your community, in your town? Start planning on making a mark. This is why we need leaders, and this is one of the ways you can actually become a champion, a true champion, and a true leader for the Constitution. All of these folks, I was going to get into this, and I will get into this, all of these legislators who go around bragging about what great conservatives they are and how they're the most constitutional people that, you know, you could vote for. And you know what? I'm not seeing it. A lot of these folks even claim, and I've unfortunately are dealing with a couple that you supposedly were supporting Republic Review, and they didn't do anything. And so I'm going to have to withdraw, you know, their names. And so, I mean, they're not champions of the Constitution if we see the Constitution continually shredded and they're not doing something about it. They're claiming that they're protecting their folks. You know what? Just because they're doing something in their state to protect the Second Amendment doesn't mean that they're actually doing anything, because there are other states that are losing their liberties. And this is where interstate leadership has to start standing up. And I'm really getting tired of people, you know, telling me that they're constitutional conservatives and they're not really doing anything that they should be doing in moving and getting Republic Review initiated. They're not leading. They're managing agendas. And to me, it's pathetic and it's sorry. And these guys have to, you know, they're going to have to come and answer to, you know, what are they going to do this coming year? Because as far as I'm concerned, they just wasted a year. We've just lost another year watching the Constitution get shredded more and more. States have to literally take their job seriously as the overseers of the Constitution. That's why we can't allow time to continually slip by. As I always do, and you know, like I said, the news isn't going anywhere. These things are just getting old and dusty, and they're just a big part of the distraction. The fact of the matter is, there is no sign that the federal government is going to disband any of its tyranny. So what do you do? Well, folks, that means that you and I are going to have to do this. You and I are going to have to take action. We're going to have to straighten our fingers out, and I may have to sell fingerboards. You know, a board that you can tape to your finger, because you're going to have to poke a lot of people in the eye. And your finger might get pretty tired, so maybe we need to, you know, get you this board so you can tape it to your finger, so your finger can poke people in the eye all day and not get tired. Because bottom line, if we're not poking people, if we're not standing up, being bold, and telling people the truth, that they're a part of the problem, then they'll never get it. And then we have to work at either getting them to be a part of the solution or getting somebody to replace them that will be a part of the solution. I love the idea, and I would like to see, you know, the county commissioners, or not county commissioners, county party leaders from, you know, the county chairs and so forth, send with a little letter, the person that they found that they want to replace these saps with. Send a little letter with this guy as he goes to the Capitol in the last week of the session before everybody comes home and claims another victory of doing nothing. And inside this letter is, hey, this is the guy that we've decided to support in, you know, taking your position. Would you mind showing him around so that he can meet the necessary people now, so that when he gets into office to replace you, he'll be able to, you know, hit the ground running? We appreciate it. Thank you much. Oh, by the way, you're fired. And let it go with that. Because bottom line is, they're obviously not doing what they need to be doing. Because when you've asked people and you've educated them on Republic Review, and then they just sit on their hands, they do nothing, and they take no bold leadership, because I'm telling you, this is the truth. What Madison and Jefferson did in 1798 was about interposition, calling out the federal government and getting the states to come together. This is what Republic Review does. So let's start where we left off. What do you do, or what do stakeholders do when their compact is violated? Well, let's start with what they don't do. The one thing that is absolutely absurd and not necessary in trying to amend the Constitution. Right? We don't need an amendment that the government can, one, ignore, And let's just say somebody comes up with this great amendment of, hey, let's make an amendment that tells the federal government that they have to abide by the Constitution. Are you kidding? Really? What are you going to say? Pretty please? Bottom line, they obviously do not care about compliance anymore. So it requires political force. And they're not even going to give you any attention or any light of day until you have enough people. That's why states have to start working together, and that's why Jefferson did exactly what he did. The problem is compliance, not a defect with the Constitution. Whether the amendment is initiated by Congress or the states, no amendment written and ratified can obtain compliance to the Constitution. Compliance only comes when the stakeholders are serious enough to use extraordinary measures, and that's, quote, extraordinary measures, close quote, within the Constitution. And those quotes are from Madison, and we'll get into that. On to answering the subtitled question, what do stakeholders do when their compact is violated? In most cases, people and institutions typically go to court to remedy the problem. But the problem is jurisdiction. Who has jurisdiction over things not delegated to the federal government, like healthcare? Remember, a few of the citations above from the ratification debates actually answer the question. And you have to go back and listen to the previous podcast in understanding what the heck those citations were. Or you can go to the Mobius Strip Press website, mobiusstrippress.com, look for the ratification extracts, go read through those regarding jurisdiction and so forth, and it'll jump out at you what Madison said. Bottom line, if it's not an enumerated power, they have no jurisdiction over it. Even George Nicholas said that. Even John Marshall said that. Remember, a few of the citations above, as I have cited regarding the ratification debates, answer the question. And John Marshall, who became Chief Justice, stated above, if, i.e. Congress, were to make a law not warranted by any of the powers enumerated, it would be considered by the judges as an infringement of the Constitution, which they are to guard. They would not consider such a law coming under their jurisdiction. So where is an enumerated power regarding marriage, or regarding the birth of a child, or regarding health care, or regarding educational curriculum, or education at all? Or how about energy? What about agriculture? What about housing and urban development? What about homeland security? Well, the homeland security is very clear. It is in their jurisdiction. It's called the militia. That is what the homeland security is. That is what is in the Constitution, not this abomination called homeland security. I'm here to tell you, folks, they've been making it up as they go along, and they've created a machine and a standing army that will it'll decimate us if we do not take the action. Right now, we have the opportunity because Trump is buying us time. Okay, let me move on. So who has jurisdiction over these things not delegated? If one uttered the words, the states, then one would be correct. There is a slight problem. When the federal government assumes a role, responsibility, or power that has not been properly delegated, a single state cannot apply enough force to obtain cooperation from the federal government. This is why it requires a simple majority of the states. That's all we need, is a simple majority of the states to step up and apply due pressure, using the powers within the Constitution. Those powers will be discussed in a different article, and I'm going to tell you about this. And I've talked about it before, but the focus of what we're trying to do at this point in time is getting you to understand that it requires the states to join together and take action. Suffice it to say, the process is what we refer to today as Republic Review, and how this works is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org's homepage. Go through those bullet outlines. They're right there on the homepage. We go through the academic argument in an outline, and then we actually go through the Republic Review process descriptions. And then at the very bottom of the page is a link to the model. Go read those and understand what the heck this all is. The concept of Republic Review can be found in the actions of Thomas Jefferson and James Madison in the 1798 Kentucky Resolutions, that was October 1798, and the Virginia Resolutions of December 1798. These resolutions were in response to the federal government passing four acts that violated the Constitution. So I'll have to take a break there. And when we come back, I'm going to pick up right where we left off regarding these acts, or the Alien and Sedition Acts that were passed by Congress. So when we come back after these two promos, we'll dig into this even further. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. Okay, so let's get this straight. These resolutions from Kentucky and Virginia were in response to these acts I've been telling you about. The acts were collectively called the Aliens and Sedition Acts, which gave the federal government new powers for deporting immigrants and regulating speech. The Kentucky resolutions can be found in section 11 of the 1798 of this document. And so when you go onto my website, I actually have these documents available. And so you can get to the Kentucky resolutions and the Virginia resolutions within my web domain, which is, again, reclaimingtherepublic.org, as well as this article that we'll be publishing, and this article will be going on Reclaiming the Republic as well. As one reads these resolutions, one can see how Jefferson is legally auditing the Constitution as to how each of the acts violated the Constitution and its amendments. Remember, by this time, 1798, they've already had a couple of amendments, or they have 10 plus 1, right? So they've already amended the Constitution 11 times. In Resolution 8, Jefferson calls for the organizing of, quote, committees of correspondence and conference, close quote, to be organized for initiating communications as the colonies did when Britain shuttered each colony's legislative body. In other words, they shut them down and got rid of them, disbanded the legislative bodies. The Kentucky Resolution was promulgated to each of the states, and Virginia quickly responded in kind 2 months later. Madison, instead of auditing the Constitution, because he wrote the Virginia Resolution, and Jefferson wrote the Kentucky Resolution, or what went to these state legislators. And so, just like Jefferson's resolution, Madison provided arguments for the state's responsibilities as the stakeholders of the Constitution, that their duty was to take action by stating in paragraph 3, quote, that in case of deliberate, palpable, and dangerous exercise of other powers not granted by the said compact, the states who are parties thereto have the right and are duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of evil and for maintaining within their respective limits the authorities, rights, and liberties appertaining to them, the states. Close quote. Actually, the states I threw in there. Too many people refer to these resolutions as calls of state nullification. If you go through what I just quoted, there is nowhere in there where they're just talking about nullification. It is very clear that these men were moving towards a, and I'm going to use the word, it's the C word, folks, so if you're an epileptic JBSer, just be careful here, convention. They were moving towards a convention, as Madison cited Jefferson's words from his book, The Notes on the State of Virginia in the Federalist Papers, Article Number 49. As a convention in dealing with encroachments of the federal government upon the state's rights. However, in Jefferson's book, the call for convention was in respect to one branch of the government encroaching upon another power. In other words, violating the separation of powers. For Jefferson stated in his book, quote, that a convention is necessary for altering the Constitution or correcting breaches of it, and the correcting breaches of it was in all capital letters, close quote. And again, as one reads both of these resolutions, there is not a mention of an Article 5 application for a convention to amend the Constitution. Their intentions are very clear. They are seeking a convention to enforce compliance. In other words, you have to apply to Congress. You have to petition to Congress to be able to open that Constitution for making any amendments. If the states do not apply to Congress and just assert their authority, which is exactly what Jefferson and Madison were trying to do, then they could have created a convention to force the federal government into compliance. And that's precisely the path they were going. And as a matter of fact, a John Bircher was the one that kind of helped me come to this conclusion. But unfortunately, that John Bircher has to hide or deny the fact that they even, you know, worked with me, because I'm mud to them now. But anyway, that's okay. That's all right. We're moving forward with the sword of truth, and we'll let everybody do damage control. Madison provides the clarity to the fact that he and Jefferson were not taking these efforts to simply nullify these acts. Madison didn't use the term nullification in his resolution. They were calling for action by all the states. This clarity, as a matter of fact, he might have. I'll have to go back. I'll have to check. But his focus was not about nullification. His focus was really getting the states to do their job in asserting their authority over that Constitution. Anyway, this clarity comes in paragraph 8. Just like the Kentucky resolutions, when Madison states that the General Assembly of the State of Virginia, quote, doth solemnly appeal to the like dispositions to the like dispositions of the other states, in confidence that they will concur with this Commonwealth in declaring, as it does hereby declare, that the acts aforesaid are unconstitutional. What he could have said are null and void, but he didn't. What he said, they are unconstitutional, and that the necessary and proper measures will be taken by each state for cooperating with this state, Virginia, in maintaining the authorities, rights, and liberties referred to the states respectively or to the people, which was right there in the 10th Amendment. Had Jefferson and Madison been seeking simple nullification, then they would have simply called for the states to just nullify the laws like they did, and everything will be hunky-dory and end of story. But the fact of the matter is that the stakeholders of the compact are obligated to keep their contract pure and intact, as they all agreed upon, which is why Madison used the term interpose in paragraph 3. And in paragraph 8, they were seeking, quote, necessary and proper measures will be taken by each for cooperating with this state. So it wasn't something that this just the state was going to do. These states, he was seeking to cooperate with each other in working together. I mean, I'm not putting these words in his mouth. If Jefferson and Madison were just seeking nullification, they could have said, hey, just all you got to do is nullify these things and it's dead in the water and we're good. Everybody got that? Okay, go nullify everybody. Good, we got it. And they would have been done. But no, they weren't done. What they were doing was they were trying to keep the Constitution and the federal government pure. Because what happens when the federal government has laws that are unconstitutional? They have to be stricken. Even though you don't enforce them in the state, the federal government still has them in the registry. You have to forcefully have them remove them from their registry in maintaining compliance. So again, this goes much further than what others have espoused regarding nullification. In other words, calls for cooperation with the committees of correspondence that Jefferson had called for to be organized were the mechanism of moving forward. If one understands the history of committees of correspondence, these were the formal communications between states as they prepared for war with Britain. Wow. I mean, are you getting this, right? What these resolutions did not do, and what Jefferson and Madison did not provide, was an operational guideline as to what would happen if enough states and other states had joined their efforts. You know what? This is all supposition, but it actually isn't, because if you really look at the simplicity of a contract, what did they do? They audited it, and now it's just now enforcing it. You have violated the Constitution. Now you must strike those violations. That's exactly what Republic Review does. This is exactly the same thing. If Jefferson and Madison were alive today, I am telling you, I'm burning in my bosom telling you that they would be asserting the exact same thing, and they would be supporting my assertions that what they needed to do and what they wanted to do was to get the states together. They would have given us a carbon copy of the process of forcing the federal government into compliance. But the problem was too many of the other states didn't recognize the threat of these little minute violations that they considered. They thought it was okay. And I'm here to tell you that all of the tyranny and all of the despotism we're living under today is not okay. They are killing babies. They are forcing people to accept repugnant, immoral things. They're driving immorality into your homes through the school system. They are doing such evil things that we have to take a stand. And we have to take the Jefferson and Madison stand, not taking the status quo that some of these other organizations are behind. I will tell you, if you are not leading and you're not working to solve the problem, and do not tell me that education is the way forward. We have to start leading. Jefferson and Madison did not go and create a curriculum to teach in the school systems because we got to teach everybody. They led. Leaders lead, and that's what we need today. I cannot emphasize this enough. But when we come back, I will pick up where we left off so that hopefully we can get through the last segment in getting through the last part of this, but it doesn't look like it. So we'll see. We'll be right back. Thank you so much. Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. To be very clear, when they were talking committees of correspondence back in those days, those were pretty serious words. Those were fighting words. What these resolutions did not do, and what Jefferson and Madison did not provide, like I said, and I want to reiterate this, they didn't provide a guideline or a step-by-step desktop procedure for what we needed to do when the federal government fell out of complying to the Constitution as to what would happen, especially if enough states and or other states had joined with Kentucky and Virginia in their efforts. What would they do then? The best speculation for this is simple. At the time of ratifying, and again, if you put this into contract law context, at the time of ratifying the Constitution, the contract law was very simple. And so the contract was based upon the words in the contract and the words stated in the ratification process. I said this time and time again, when the delegates who went to the Constitutional Convention explained what each of these lines meant and what they didn't mean, those explanations are legally binding. To be clear, and let me just move forward. More specifically, in context to clarifications, elucidations, and definitions of each word and clause within the Constitution, the words stated by those proponents, in other words, the Federalists who were trying to get the ratification of the Constitution passed, in supporting the ratification, these things that are supporting the ratification are legally binding. In other words, the clarifications, elucidations, and definitions are legally binding. In contract law, even then, as well as it is now, you can basically count on the fact that when you start defining the terms of the contract, it becomes legally binding. I like using the metaphor of an employee. As an aside, if I was going to be your employer and you were going to be coming and working for me, and it wasn't a franchise, it just had lots of stores, and you were familiar with my stores, and you noticed that everybody wore ball caps, and I was hiring you directly, and you came to me and said, hey, in an email, I notice everybody wears ball caps, but does it really matter if I wear a ball cap or whether I wear some kind of hat? You know, so as long as it's head attire, right? As long as I have something on my head. And I sent an email back to you. Yeah, absolutely. As long as you're wearing a hat of any kind, you're good. You can come to work for us, but you got to wear a hat while you're working. Okay. So you show up to work with a top hat on, and my manager at a local store kind of comes up to you and says, hey, what are you doing here? And you say, well, I'm working because GR hired me, and what do you want me to do? And he goes, well, I don't want you to do anything until you put a ball cap on. You got to put a ball cap on. He goes, actually, GR told me I could wear any kind of hat, and this is the only hat I have anyway. So, he told me I could work this way. And the manager goes, I don't care what GR said. He may own this place, but we have an image to keep up, and you're going to wear a ball cap or you're fired. And at that point, you know, you'd say, well, I don't have one. And then he says, okay, you're fired. And then you literally leave because you feel like you've been duly fired and you've been duly harmed. You now have legal standing because you have evidence from me that basically said you can wear any hat you want. And so now by you getting fired by wearing a top hat, that gives you the legal standing because you have had an amendment to the contract. Because the contract said you had to wear a hat and you knew that everybody wore ball caps. And so I told you could wear any hat you wanted. And now you're going to be, if it was a salary job, you'd probably be due 1 year of salary from us because we hired you based on a 1 year salary. Let me move on. Again, in contract law, even then, as well as it is now, how a contract is defined and clarified during the ratification process, especially if it is written down, it is legally binding. Subsequently, the words the Federalist used, or more specifically, the delegates who actually attended, like in the Virginia ratifications, that debate, it was Randolph, it was Madison, and I think those were the two primary ones that were promoting it. Mason was against it. There may be two other men. But bottom line, what those men were stating in supporting the Constitution are legally binding terms. And so they defined the compact to very specific terms, and those terms are what convinced the states to accept this compact or the Constitution. So the ratification debates and these, actually not the entire thing, only the words that were used in selling the compact. In other words, Henry said all sorts of disparaging things about the Constitution and made a lot of things up. None of those things are legally binding. The only things that are legally binding are the words that were defining it for the sale of, in other words, by the proponents. And so, therefore, the clarifications, elucidations, and definitions asserted by these proponents were not just applicable to that state where they were used, because this is a multi-party compact. These definitions were applicable to all states. This is because this compact created a new polity, a new form of government called the general government or federal government. And how this polity or government was to act or engage with the states. This is because the federal government was required to act in a uniform manner with regard to the states. I want you to get this. The government has no mechanism of treating these few states over here differently than the rest of the states. how it interfaced and dealt with the states were all on equal footing, equal standing, so forth and so on. Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 1, also referred to as the Uniformity Clause, makes the hard and fast requirement upon the government that they have to be uniform in how they treat the states. Stated differently, there is no mechanism in the Constitution to allow the federal government to differentiate in how it was to tax or to serve one state differently than the rest. Therefore, the words, definitions, and arguments asserted in one state's ratification debates are applicable to the application of the Constitution to all states. Even more of a miracle and less of a coincidence, throughout all the debates, as stated before, one will not find any conflicting definitions from the proponents of the Constitution. In each of the states that debated the Constitution to whatever degree, the overwhelming conclusion was that the Constitution was an enumerated Constitution and did not create a general Constitution. A general Constitution grants general powers and allows the government to discern what it can do and how to exert its power. In contrast, our enumerated Constitution only delegates to the federal government specific powers that are listed within it. If it is not listed, then the federal government does not have the true authority or power to exercise these powers. For a plethora of reasons, we have lost these definitions and understandings. A primary reason for this loss was that we failed to remember and focus on these words of clarity during the ratification debates. It was not due to the fact that the words were not captured, but the lack of maturity in contract law and understanding the importance of those words that elucidated and intent, and again, those words that elucidated the intent and limitations of this compact. Consequently, when Madison was asked for his notes by John George Jackson when he took notes during the Constitutional Convention, Madison refused to share them, and those notes were not published until after his death by his wife Dolly Madison by his request. Instead, he stated this in his letter to Mr. Jackson, quote, "But whatever might have been the opinions entertained in forming the Constitution, it was the duty of all to support it in its true meaning as understood by the nation at the time of its ratification." So I'm going to change one word there. At the time of its true meaning as understood by the states at the time of its ratification, because it was the states that were ratifying it, and they were the ones receiving the true meaning of the Constitution. No one felt this obligation more than I have done, and there are few, perhaps, whose ultimate and deliberate opinions on the merits of the Constitution accord in a greater degree with that obligation. Therefore, Madison recognized and pointed to the contractual standing that the Constitution's true meaning, as understood by the nation at the time of its ratification, was how it was to be defined moving forward, period. It was not to be able to be slid or to be perverted or be undermined by the court, by the president, or by Congress. It was the duty of the states to guard those meanings of the Constitution. So, with that, we're going to wrap this up. I can kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel, so we'll be wrapping this up tomorrow. You'll definitely want to get the final bit and conclusion on this. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.